Hi, it's Mike. It's the Saturday Show. It's Saturday. Did you have a good week? You know who didn't? O.J. Simpson. He is dead at age 76, and we noted it, and we said that he did kill someone. Well, it's not that we said it, it's that a civil jury said it. Many people, institutions, 24-hour sports networks found it a bit hard to say this. Not us, but also not us here at The Gist back in 2016, December of that year. Ezra Edelman came by. He would go on to win every award for his documentary on O.J., and we're going to play that whole interview. So first, in case you missed the news, A, the glove didn't fit. B, they felt like they should have acquitted. But C, O.J. Simpson dead. And then we'll talk about the broader societal implications of what O.J. did with Ezra Edelman. Controversial statement upcoming about foodies. You know the best part about being a foodie? It's the food. And you know the worst part? Well, I'm not going to say everything else. The restaurant experience is often really quite good, but so often it's not. Getting the reservation and then cramming into a cramped table and then paying, it's often very expensive. And here's this trend. You know, tile looks cool on the floor often and brick on the wall, but then when you combine that in a crowded restaurant, it is hard to enjoy dinner above the din. What about the cooking? What about the food? Well, I give you Cook Unity. It's the first chef-to-you service that delivers locally sourced meals from award-winning chefs right to your door every week. Choose between 4 and 16 meals. You can just give your life over to Cook Unity, or just pick and choose their delicious meals from award-winning chefs. A chef collective bringing exciting culinary talent straight to your table. It's sometimes hard to find out who are the up-and-coming chefs. Cook Unity has collected many of them, and they give you 7 different dietary preferences: vegan, paleo, pescatarian, gluten-free, and then you can tell them, I don't like soy, I don't like nuts, or can't have them, and you don't have them. They post the menus 2 weeks in advance. It's fun to go and look over the menu. I've been enjoying so many of the meals from Cook Unity. I had a Korean beef dish that was amazing. I had a quinoa and salmon with the string beans that was likewise amazing. Couldn't be easier to make. They don't give it to you frozen. They give it to you in packaging that could last in the fridge up to 7 days. I've tested them on that, and it has worked. It was delicious. So experience chef quality meals every week delivered right to your door. Go to cookunity.com/thegist or enter code thegist before checkout for 50% off your first week. That is 50% off your first week by using the code THEGIST or going to cookunity.com/THEGIST. This episode is brought to you by The Jordan Harbinger Show. You've heard me talk about The Jordan Harbinger Show because it's one of my favorites. He does in-depth interviews with some of the world's most fascinating minds. I can name a few: Barbara Boxer, Anderson Cooper, Michael McFaul, the Ukraine or Russia ambassador talking about Ukraine. One I recently listened to was Stanley McChrystal, the general, the former general, and he told an interesting story about revering Robert E. Lee. But then, after having a portrait of him for 40 years, he's a 63-year-old man, throwing it in the trash. Because his wife says, you know, what that picture and that man means to you, it doesn't mean to other people, and you have to understand that. And then in the interview, they got around to the point where McChrystal talked about that interview in Rolling Stone magazine that pretty much ended his career, where got to the desk of Barack Obama, and it had McChrystal saying unflattering things about the war effort, and just how he talked to his wife and how they decided not to be bitter and not to wallow in it. He could have taken some shots at the process, the reporter, or the president at that point, but he didn't. It was just an overall good interview. It was facilitated by Jordan's excellent interview style. Whether Jordan is conducting an interview or giving advice to a listener, you will find something useful that can apply to your own life in every single episode of The Jordan Harbinger Show. That could mean learning how to ask for advice the right way or discovering a little mindset tweak that changes how you see the world. Search for The Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R, like the first three letters in hard, B-I-N-G-E, as in how you'll want to catch up on all the episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. O.J. Simpson is dead. The juice squeezed all he could out of life and not just his own. Headline, NBC News, O.J. Simpson dies of cancer at 76 after storied NFL career and notorious murder trial. New York Times, O.J. Simpson, athlete acquitted of murder, dies of cancer at 76. The headlines marking his passing, as you could hear, say it all. Say it some. O.J. Simpson, football player and actor accused of murdering his ex-wife, dies at 76. That from Variety. It's all true. He was accused. He was indicted. He was tried. He was acquitted.
Remember these words. If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
And that's where most of the headlines leave it. But you know, they could have said O.J. Simpson, adjudicated killer and former football star dead. If we say Donald Trump has been adjudicated to have committed sexual assault, and we do say that because it is true, a civil jury in the case of E. Jean Carroll reached the verdict that said so. A civil jury in the case of O.J. Simpson found him liable for killing Ron Goldman. The family of his ex-wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, out of sensitivity to Nicole and O.J.'s children, who were just then 11 and 7, they would have been named plaintiffs. So they didn't sue OJ for the death of Nicole. They just put in a battery claim. They won that claim for the amount of $12 million. OJ has never paid that, or the Goldman family. But let us not allow the death of OJ Simpson or the deaths he was adjudicated to have caused get in the way of the proper contextual celebration of his life. Let's go to the videotape. Okay, O.J. confronts the gunman, and they shoot him several times. He conks his head, and oh no, it's a hot stove! O.J. puts his hand on the hot stove. This is, he has now conked his shoulder against some wet paint, and not an open window! The hand is in the open window. This is just terrible, terrible for O.J. A cake! Who put a wedding cake out on a ship full of gunmen? Not the bear trap! This can't get any worse for the juice! He's over the boat. And that's about enough of the context that we need. As the Naked Gun's Officer Nordberg, Simpson gave us laughs. As a Hertz spokesman, he gave us marketing. As a football player, he gave us effort, talent, and records. He won a Heisman Trophy at USC. He claimed the NFL's all-time single-season rushing mark.
Neither sleet nor snow nor the New York Jets could stop O.J. Simpson and the Buffalo Bills, who ran to four records on a freezing afternoon. Three of them were Simpson's. He entered the game needing 61 yards to break Jim Brown's single-season rushing record.
And on this game, he became the first player to pass 2,000 yards in a season, a 14-game season at that, which has never been equaled.
Not just breaking Brown's 10-year-old record, but burying it deep in the snowy ground of Shea Stadium.
Still, his legacy offends and appalls me as a humanitarian, as a believer in justice, and of course as a Jets fan. Clearly, the ghosts of Shea Stadium are still unsettled, as we heard mentioned by Hughes Rudd of CBS News in 1973. O.J. Simpson died of cancer at the age of 76. Ronald Goldman would have been 55, Nicole Brown Simpson, 64.
When I went over to Rockingham, he had like three TVs, and each and every one of them, he had a different channel on.
CNN is staying on top of his own.
Chicago, questioned him for 3 hours. Well, his lawyer, William Hall,
has not ruled him out as a suspect.
Suspect? I'm. What are you talking about? Is he crazy? And I said, OJ, what happened to your finger?
At the time, the OJ Simpson trial was said to be the trial of the century. We're beginning to learn just now that it really is more than the trial of the century. It can be seen as the story of America. And making this point eloquently, well, were two documents. There was the FX dramatization of it, which was fantastic. But in a league of its own was Ezra Edelman's documentary, OJ Made in America. It was an ESPN feature. It spooled over how many episodes? How many hours?
Five on television and streaming.
Five on television. Ezra Edelman, the director of that documentary, is here. Thanks for coming in, Ezra.
Thank you.
So how old were you when all these events went down? The trial, I mean.
I was the Bronco Chase, June 17th, 1994. I had just finished my sophomore year in college. And okay. So I was at home at my parents' house watching that.
So we're almost the same age. So that means the events, an older generation, people slightly older than us would always remember where they were when Kennedy was assassinated. Mm-hmm. But now I think the cultural touchstone events of people of our lifetime would be 9/11, the Challenger explosion, the Bronco Chase, and probably this election. Probably add to it when you found out that Donald Trump won. I think that those are the four.
But I would say that the first three are very different from...
Because they were unexpected and unscheduled.
I was going to say even the Challenger event was different in the sense that, you know, depending on where you were, and I was in an elementary school classroom, and sort of you're actually watching something when this incredible tragedy happens, but you were sort of already geared to something was, you know, there was already an event that was going to take place, whereas 9/11, tragically, and the Bronco Chase were these things that were unforeseen where you woke up and or were somewhere and someone said, turn on the TV, like this is what's happening in your mind and your sort of worldview, certainly in the case of 9/11, was, you know, fundamentally altered. And with this election, I feel like, depending on how you've been absorbing it and paying attention, this is something that you've been contemplating, fearing, and or looking at in disbelief that this could actually happen.
Yeah.
And so in some ways, this is a 2-year process.
Yeah.
And so in that way, it's like it's as transformative in terms of the place that the country we live in, certainly more so than watching OJ on the 405 on a Bronco. But we've had, I think, a little bit more time to wrap our heads around it, even though now, depending on who you are, there's not enough time in the history of the world to wrap your head around what happened.
So after the verdict, when did you start becoming interested in it as a larger glimpse into society?
When ESPN approached me and asked me if I wanted to do a film about it.
Really? Did you read the Tubin book?
After I was approached to do the film about it.
So when they asked you, did you say, what'd you say?
They asked me if I was interested in making a 5-hour film. And I said, I am interested in making a 5-hour film. I said, what is this film about? They said, OJ. And I said, I do not think I'm interested in making that film. I was not interested in OJ. But here's the thing. I don't mean to say that I was so ignorant of what that crime trial conversation was. I know fundamentally what it was about. And so frankly, when they asked me, I said, well, what is there more to say about it? Mm-hmm. Like, this has been discussed and picked over, like, from the standpoint of, like, did he do it or not do it? I could not care less. So I'm like, and I'm not doing that. If you want to do this film, you want to do this thing that's going to be about the trial, I'm not interested in that. But you do want to do something that is formally ambitious that I'm interested in. What is this thing about? Well, if you're going to give me this much time, then I can explore these things that I am more engaged.
Yeah.
It is a story about race in America. Right. It is a story about the city of Los Angeles. It is a story about the LAPD and the black community there. It is a story about the celebrity in America. It is a story about masculinity and identity and the criminal justice system and all. And like, yeah, I could get into that. And so immediately when I even started thinking about it after that first conversation after being approached, it was, well, okay, I know OJ grew up in the project in San Francisco. I know he went to USC in 1967. I know what USC was during those years. I know where USC was located,
mm-hmm.
vis-a-vis Watts, which sort of burned in violence, you know, after an incident of police brutality a year and a half before OJ got there. I understood what OJ, the path he took, and immediately, like, those, I'm like, oh, those, there are all these juxtapositions within that, in that world. And sort of, you know, from an identity standpoint, from a race standpoint, from a the choices that he was making, that was enough for me to, like, well, I'm interested in that.
Did you do all the interviews?
I did.
Oh, my God. Estimate how much raw tape that might have been.
72 interviews. Let's call it, like, an average of 2.5 to 3 hours an interview.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's 200, two, you know, say 180 to 200 hours of interview footage. So, a lot.
Yeah. That's a week, more than a week without doing anything. When some of the police who became flashpoints in the trial, when they spoke, I think, honestly and brazenly to you, did you expect that? How did you react in that moment? How'd you get them to that moment?
I didn't expect that. I think that, you know, a lot of people have asked me, like, what surprised you the most? And I don't have an answer to that question. But I guess the answer to that question would be broadly that people, after they had agreed to sit for an interview, were more open and forthcoming than I would have imagined.
Yeah.
And that certainly includes the cops. And so I think that my guess is that they did appreciate that I was taking a longer view of this. And this was a larger discussion about the city that they are from, the city that they have sort of been, you know, helped or tried to police in the over the course of decades, and that they have real world, real life experience and real opinions still that they would want to offer that, you know, in light of the world that we live in, maybe they feel that those opinions have been sort of discredited or mm-hmm. sort of not heard in the way that they sort of that, you know, go against their experience and belief system. So, yeah, it surprised me that some things that came out of people's mouths, that even if it was not, oh, you really believe that? It's also like, you're not a dumb person. So even if you really believe that, you know how people are going to absorb what's coming out of your mouth. And that's somewhere between that's really brave or it's really stupid. I'm not so sure which, but like how I reacted to it was like, okay. And yeah. In some cases it's like, is that what you mean? Like, I'm not trying to burn anybody weirdly. Like, I just kind of want to have an open, honest conversation. And so there were a couple of times I was like, really?
So I did want to talk about the election because I've been thinking about OJ and the election.
You're going to get me in trouble.
Why's that?
I don't know.
No.
No, I'm joking.
Yeah.
It's fine.
There were definitely racial undertones and overtones. And we saw an America surprise itself in a way. I even saw a comedian, I think it was Chappelle, it might have been Rock, saying, you know, I haven't seen this many upset white people since the OJ verdict. So do you think that America fools itself for a time and then retells itself the story? Or do you think that where, you know, President Obama would say the arc towards history bends towards justice?
Arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice.
Mm-hmm. I've always said you could be living during the medieval times and wait 300 years and not see any evidence of that. But what do you think? Do you think the election showed us things that OJ showed us 20 years ago and we haven't really progressed as much as we think?
Oh, I don't think they're comparable. Not only the shock and, yes, the divide. You know, the sort of analogy is that, wait, two different groups of people, however you want to define those groups of people, are looking at one thing and seeing something different mm-hmm. and not quite understanding and not understanding how the other person is like, how do you think that? That's not possible because I'm looking at the same thing and I see something completely different. What, you know, what the fuck? I don't know in terms of out loud. I don't know anybody who voted for Trump.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any friends who voted for Trump. So it's like when I know the way I absorb Donald Trump in terms of the rhetoric that came out of his mouth is what I don't know actually what his true core belief system is, but I know the things that he said. And I know that everything he said has been so alienating to so many people that I think I was lulled into a sense of I live in a country where it's not possible that that guy could be elected president. I sort of allowed myself to weirdly drink the Kool-Aid of he is unqualified. You know, there's just a fringe element of people who would be like, that's okay. You know, and I can't devalue everybody who might just actually care about this one or two, you know, these single things here and there that are not sort of germane to my life.
Yeah.
It's just, I'm still processing it. I mean, it's shocking to me.
You made me think of the analogy of Black America at the time of the OJ verdict to white America who voted for Donald Trump, that the feelings were so raw that it overwhelmed perhaps the evidence. And maybe you could make a case that the rest of us who don't know anyone who could possibly think that way need to understand this other side of things.
Well, I do think here's the thing. I mean, I think that in some ways I've said this about the OJ verdict or like what was happening at the time where there was a little bit of an intellectual versus emotional sort of conflict happening and
yes.
sort of what African-Americans felt very fundamentally based on, you know, the history of injustice at the hands of the police, the criminal justice system, and the feeling of having experienced that personally or family members or friends, like that's a very emotional place to be living in. So when you see this high-profile African-American on trial with the sort of notion that he might have been framed by the police and everything, it's like you emotionally are sort of going like, no, like I feel protective and I want him to get off. And I can see on the other end if someone, and it doesn't have to be – you know, racial, but it's like intellectually, like, well, here's the evidence.
Yeah. And the woman prosecuting the case against him, if you will, literally or figuratively, is someone that people find unlikable. So she's not the perfect vessel to make that point.
But here's the thing. So part of the film, right, is the notion that I wanted to try to have white viewers emotionally connect with that history of injustice. So when you got to the point of the trial and or the verdict, you would sort of have a different experience emotionally yourself. You can go, I understand now why people thought invested in his innocence. I understand, forgetting OJ himself, why they celebrated his acquittal. Because I've just been taken on this journey and maybe I have a perspective that makes sense. Now, to me, the scary thing is there is an analogy between the white Trump voter and the black person who was hoping OJ got off. But the difference is one is rooted, to me, in this history of subjugation, racism, brutality, disenfranchisement, disempowerment.
Yeah.
And this other one is, unfortunately, even if those feelings have crept up because of what they sense is happening in the country, the other is rooted in the opposite of that.
Yeah, it's legitimate versus illegitimate grievance. Now, who are we to say illegitimate? Well, we're people like filmmakers or podcast hosts, and you know, you chronicle it,
and that's where the profound heartbreak comes in. That's where that whole idea of this sort of arc of the moral universe, and you feel at a certain point, oh, we're on this continuum. I don't know if we're on our way down, but we're still going towards that place, and we've gotten past these things. We're getting to a better place.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, it's like, oh, I think I deluded myself.
Yeah. Well, then again, the arc of the moral universe is a fancy way of we shall overcome him. And that was, you know, sung while picking cotton. So.
But you actually feel like, I think, you know, you forgot who controls the country. And and that's where you sort of bought into this sense that we have progressed in a certain way. And yeah, and it's a wake-up call.
I think Tubin has said that he regards OJ's status now incarcerated in Nevada as also an injustice when judged against the crimes that he was actually accused of and what the sentence should be. Are you comfortable with conclusions?
I mean, yeah, it's funny. We're talking about the moral universe.
Yeah.
There's karmic justice. There's legal justice. And so, like, is it wrong for him to have gone to jail for 33 years for that crime? Yes. Do I feel bad about it? No.
No.
That's my answer to that question.
Ezra Edelman, director, OJ, Made in America. It is on Hulu. It is on, if you have ESPN, it is still on demand. We demand that you watch it. By the way, I will say that this was probably the longest periods of your film were the longest uninterrupted non-sports mentions on ESPN in that network's history.
I feel good about that.
Yeah. At least you kept Stephen A. Smith from yelling at me off the TV for a little while. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Ezra Edelman, thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Corey Warr is the producer of The Gist. Joel Patterson's the senior producer. We'll talk to you on Monday.